Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2006 NFL season.
Sack Gus Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Let's go.
The AFC Championship for 2006-2007 will be decided on the field at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis this Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. Pats at the Colts. I'm ready right now. Let's kick it off. Guys out on the field might feel like they still have a little work to do, but I know you're probably ready. As I am, kick this thing off on Sunday. We do welcome you inside Patriots Playbook for this Thursday. I'm John Rook. I hope you had a chance to tune into yesterday's show because we wanted to try to find a way to let you hear from the players and the coaches and the particulars involved here, because quite often we're so much into, you know, opinion and innuendo and thing around, and you want the guys who are actually going to do the playing to be able to tell you for themselves how they're doing and how they want to go about doing it, and so hopefully that provided a little bit of insight for you. We'll get back to a little bit more of the normal way of doing things today, although we are going to hear from Patriots coach Bill Belichick today, and Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator who joins us on Thursdays throughout the NFL season. He will join us in our second hour today, as he normally does. And believe you me, we will break down thoroughly both of these championship matchups between the Pats and the Colts, and then we will not ignore the Bears and the Saints either in the NFC, because should the Patriots survive, well, then obviously they'll have to play the winner of the other game in the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. So we will get into that as well. In the meantime, our normal Thursday fare has to do with you. We got a ton of emails left over from PFW in progress today. We will get to those. So if you wrote in, hang in there. We'll get to them. And right now, what I want you to do is consider the last two or three days that we've had here on Patriots.com radio. And I know you're ready to go out on a limb. If you have not done so already, you are now ready to go out on a limb. You are now ready to make your selection. You are now ready to dissect and analyze. You are now ready to declare a winner. So pick it. Is it going to be all Pats? Do we have Colts fans listening in that are 110% behind their team? Last week we had an extraordinary number of Chargers fans listening into our programming. And we were very, very happy to have them, and I thought that they actually did add a little something to this program that we don't normally get. So if we do have Colts fans, those of you in Indy and or surrounding areas or wherever you may be listening on this globe of ours, and you're a Colts fan, you're listening because you want to hear the other side of the story. You want to hear what it's like in the enemy camp. All right? I want your 2 cents worth. Tell me why you think the Colts will win. I mean, it's not rocket science here. I say that often, but it's really not. We can, exit and know it, and we can, try to break it down for you and tell you why we think they won, even how they won. Fact is, the Colts won between the two teams during the regular season, 27-20. We all know that. It's been well documented. They deserved to win that day. That the Patriots were in position on the final drive of the game before Brady threw a fourth interception to try to tie that game was truly one of the more amazing aspects of the game, because I thought the Colts pretty much dominated. And I think there are a lot of people who would agree that the Colts pretty much dominated in that game. So why should this game on Sunday be any different? That's what I want to know from you. Why should this game be any different, especially when you consider the Colts are at home? This is the third time that they will have hosted an AFC Championship game. They are 0-2, by the way, since they moved to Indianapolis in 1984. So it's been a while. They're looking for their first trip to the Super Bowl. They're looking for a first conference championship. They're looking to get off the schneid against the Patriots in, playoff games that mean something. Peyton Manning certainly has his own personal albatross around his neck, perhaps keeping him from, immortality, I guess. I mean, he will still go down probably as one of the best to have ever played the game, but, he'll be viewed more as a Dan Marino rather than as a John Elway or even as a Tom Brady if he does not win the big one. And whether that's right or wrong, it's just, it is what it is. It's our favorite saying, you know, obviously here in Patriots Nation. And it's just what it is. So does he finally get over the hump? Does he finally get off the schneid? You know, Len Pasquarelli of ESPN.com, who I respect greatly for his overall knowledge in the NFL, I was a little surprised, you know, as he's breaking down the game and saying this and that. And I'm, you know, his bottom line was, well, you know, hey, I just think that the Colts are due. You know, if you're telling me that, you know, you're picking the Colts simply because you think they're due, well, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I'd like to see a little bit more analyzing on that. But if you are one of those that share that particular opinion, well, don't shy away, because we welcome all comers to the program. All comers. All opinions are worth something here in the program. And as I've said many times, and we'll say here again, we read every email. Some of them we don't get to. Some of them we can't get to. Some of them we won't get to. But we do read them all. And we'll try to share most of them with you here on the program. So webradio@patriots.com is the email address. It's the same email address as you've known all season long, and you've also known for PFW, webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. I had good phone calls day before yesterday when we opened up the phone, so let's open them up again today. And you can call right in, and the lines are open and available. And you can give us your 2 cents worth on the game. If you've got questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number, and we'll take your phone call and do it talk show style on the radio. So that's what we've got going on today. I've got a few thoughts that I want to get to before we start looking at some of the emails. I have to admit that I mentioned on Tuesday that I thought certainly, and I reiterated from last week, that the winner of the Patriots-San Diego game would go on to win the Super Bowl, and I really have not come off of that. I would say that if by some chance the Patriots don't win, which is certainly a possibility this Sunday, that I still also, and I'm sure this is probably no great stretch to many of you, I'm still fairly convinced that the Colts would end up winning the Super Bowl. In other words, that they would beat the NFC team. But that being said, this is, of course, why they play the games. I don't think that the AFC champion will be an overwhelming favorite, although I think that there'll be a decided favorite, and that means probably between 7 to 10 points. There will be a tremendous amount of sentiment if either the Patriots or the Colts play the Saints. There will be a tremendous amount of sentiment on the sides of New Orleans. You'll have the entire country, save for the one city or the one area that the AFC champion is in, whether it's New England or Indianapolis, you'll have the rest of the country rooting for the Saints. I just don't think there's any way around that. And it's probably rightfully so, considering not only what that organization has been through, but what the region of New Orleans and Louisiana and that part of the country in the South Gulf area has been through in the last year and a half since Hurricane Katrina. So it'll be hard to root against the Saints, and that will be just another obstacle for whoever survives, be it Colts or Pats, to overcome. Now, should the Bears win that football game, win the NFC Championship, then, you know, you'll have a great Midwest battle between Chicago and Indianapolis, or you'll have a rematch of Super Bowl 20, in which the Bears, as I know we all know, thrashed the Patriots at one of the largest margins ever at 46-10. And you'll figure that, well, maybe 21 years later, it'll be payback time. And so that'll be a big, huge angle that will be played upon starting next week and the week after. And by the way, have I mentioned I hate 2 weeks off between the Super Bowl? I realize that those who are involved in the planning and the logistics and the tickets and the hotels and moving the team headquarters and yada, yada, I realize that they like that extra week because it takes them that much time. And a lot of the players like the extra week because it takes some time to move their families and scour tickets and find hotels and do all that stuff. But, you know, as a member of the media and as a fan, I don't know how anybody could like that extra week. I really don't. I mean, it's because we end up beating the one game into the ground ad nauseum. And it's just, it's really, it's ridiculous, bordering on sublime. So, in that regard, we don't have any choice over that because it will be 2 weeks off. But I would still favor either the Patriots or the Colts to win the Super Bowl in potential, and we'll talk with Russell Baxter about that in the second hour of the program today. As far as the game this Sunday is concerned, where the Pats and the Colts are playing in the RCA Dome, I don't know that the Patriots will do a heck of a lot differently than they did back during the season when they lost 27-20. Now, obviously, they want to change the outcome of the game. But by that, I mean, I think what they feel, and again, this is just my thought here, I think that they feel like better execution overall will put them in position to win the football game. Better execution overall will put them in a position to win the football game. Now, ultimately, time is only going to, you know, tell on this, but I think they felt like physically they were certainly a good enough matchup. Execution-wise, they did break down. Defensively, they allowed too much between the 20s. Obviously, a couple of big plays as well. Great catch by Marvin Harrison in the end zone, a juggling catch that he caught inbounds. I mean, it was a tremendous catch. I think they feel like, you know, hey, that probably doesn't happen again, and if we tighten up our own end, that score reverses itself. Well, you know what? I'm not sure that they're wrong about this. So, as all big games do, the game will break down to, well, first and foremost, time of possession. I think the Patriots will do what they can to hold the ball away. I think the Patriots, if they can hold the football for upwards of 35 minutes in this game, there's no doubt in my mind that they'll win. I don't know that they can hold it for 35 minutes, but I think that that would have to be the goal. Second of all, you can't turn the ball over three times like you did against San Diego last week, and I don't care if the other team is forcing you into these mistakes. Patriots were very lucky that the defense came up big and forced four Charger miscues in their own right. Now, I don't think you can count on that happening week after week. You can say that the Patriots' defense has been playing opportunistically, but you can't count on that type of thing happening. So the offense has to take care of business itself. The defense has to take care of business itself. Special teams have to take care of their own business. Don't turn the ball over. Tom can't throw into double coverage. He can't overthrow receivers. If he's going to do anything wrong, he needs to underthrow them where nobody can get the ball. Don't want to be thrown off of the back foot. Got to find a way. And while, you know, we gave Matt Light plenty of praise for his performance this last week against the Chargers, you need to make sure that Dwight Freeney doesn't make it a long day for Matt. Whether or not you keep a tight end on that side or you keep a back in the backfield, you need to give Tom time to step up into the pocket and complete the throw the proper way. And again, as we've discussed all season long, Brady still this year has not quite had that sharpness, that crispness from time to time, even when he has had time throwing the football in the pocket. This is why, and I think we were all in agreement on this, or at least most of us were in agreement on this before the playoffs started. This is why Tom did not deserve to be a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback or be a Pro Bowl quarterback this year. He had an off year, statistically speaking, for him. Now, I think, again, when you compare him side by side, especially the end result of the game with the Chargers, there's no doubt that he stands out better than Phillip Rivers. But when you look at the whole piece of the puzzle, well, you know, he's the one that kind of set himself up for a big failure because of his previous successes. So it's hard to rationalize out of that and say, oh, well, Brady should have, you know, another Pro Bowl berth. Well, no. We didn't think he did at the time. We didn't think he deserved it at the time. So I'm really not going to change that right now. But he can win the bowl that counts the most. And certainly, better late than never in terms of his overall performance. Isn't that what they're saying in Indy right now concerning their defense? How does a team give up 170-plus yards a game on the ground over 16 weeks, 17 weeks in the regular season, and then shut down both the Chiefs and the Ravens in the running game? How does that happen? It's not all Bob Sanders, although he certainly is a tremendous improvement. And a lot of that is due to the fact that he's a catalyst for that team defensively, much like Rodney Harrison serves in that role for the Patriots. But how does a team go from being that bad to that good? The answer has got to be, friends, it has got to be somewhere in the middle. And so I think you'll see on Sunday the Patriots trying to hammer away at the middle of the Colts defense. Now, I think we also, to a lesser extent, need to give credit to Anthony Booger McFarland since coming over from Tampa Bay in the middle of the season. I think McFarland is starting to get keyed into what the Colts are trying to do. I think he's showing that he's still a very, very good defensive tackle, a Pro Bowl caliber player, and I think he's doing a lot to filling the gaps and, you know, attacking at the line of scrimmage, hitting at the point of the attack, and not letting runners get loose, not giving blockers a chance to make their blocks. So, yes, Sanders is a factor back there in support, especially when he comes up in the box and, you know, puts up as the eighth man in the box. But, you know, I think that the unsung hero here has been Anthony McFarland, at least in my own estimation. So I do expect the Patriots to run right at the Colts. I don't think they're going to try to go around in. I don't think they're going to try to do anything fancy. I think that you'll see Dylan and certainly plenty of Lawrence Maroney try to go right up the gut on him. I think you'll see controlled passing game. Again, I think you ought to see the Patriots go with 10 to 20 plays, scripted, no huddle, five wide, empty backfield. I think that you'll – this is, again, and I mentioned this earlier this week if you weren't with us. This is who the Patriots of 2006, 2007 are. This is who they are. They are a chameleon football team. They can change what they need to be. As well as any team in recent memory has changed itself, they can change themselves over and make themselves to be the type of team that can adapt to what the other team is throwing at them. This is, you know, game planning is such a strategic part of winning any game simply because it's hard to do. When you see what another team brings at you, in the middle of the heat of battle, in the heat of competition, when you're trying to focus on the play at hand, and to sit there and try to look ahead a few plays and game plan and see how best can we come out of this situation, I don't think anybody really realizes how tough that is. Not only for the coaches that are trying to design the adjustments, but for the players to understand what it is the coaches are trying to tell them. It's hard. And so in this regard, this is what the Patriots, this is the type of team they've become. They have become a team that is like Gumby, okay? They can bend this way and that way. They can move over there. They can come over here. They can get there. They can get, you know, here. They can do a lot of different things. They can bend. They don't break all that often. They can give you what you need from them. And so this is who the Patriots are. And this is what the Colts will have to contend with. And that's the Patriots' best attribute. The fact is that they can change things on the fly. They can adjust as well, if not better, than anybody in the NFL. Certainly of the four teams now overall that are left in this NFL postseason tournament. They can change. They can adapt. So when this game gets underway and they get a good look at what Manning is bringing them offensively, what the Colts are going to do defensively, can the Patriots change again? Or, better yet, did the Patriots have the right idea dialed up to begin with? Because this is where I think the Patriots excel. In games that they have not had to change as much, where they haven't had, perhaps, to make as many adjustments in-game, I think those are the kind of games that the Patriots have tended to dominate overall. When they roll the dice and they hit it big, they throw the seven, they you know, figure out what the other team is going to do. And the other team does exactly what the Patriots think they're going to do, and they play right into the Patriots' hands, and that's when a close game can become not so close. So my guess would be if you see the Patriots win a game that's, you know, not as close as you thought it would be, it's because the Patriots guessed right and the Colts failed to change. Conversely, if it's a close game, either way, you've got teams that are going to be adjusting in game. Who's going to win the battle of adjustments? That's how I kind of look at it. Web radio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's how you reach us here on the program today. Let's get to some stuff to lead it off with. The first one here comes from Lou, who wrote in the last hour of the program in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He says he's originally from Quincy. Peyton Manning will be Peyton Manning. He will be rushed by us very effectively, but will roll out sooner than expected. They will flush him out of the pocket. The question is, what will the Patriots do when he does that? They got burnt twice this season in New England, but will the Pats handle this one well? They should look up into the sky for the high throw in panic. Seriously, the big play will be something that could burn New England. Other than that, I think the Pats will be fine. Indy might plan a couple of so-called fake busted plays to attack the Patriots and go deep. Plays like what happened this year in New England when they almost had them and then turned it into a large gain. Kind of a different kind of screen when everyone thinks that they have the quarterback and then a large gain is made. Will the Colts let the Pats come after Manning and then have a plan to counterattack? He says, keep being yourselves. All right. You can only say a team is destined to win after that victory is accomplished. Never before. That's just illogical and stupid. We can say the 2001 Pats were destined to upset the Rams and win the Super Bowl. Why? Because they did it. I agree with all you guys, talking about the PFW guys earlier. That's not a smart analysis. That's stupid analysis. Peyton Manning, not destined to be a Marino unless his career is over, and he hasn't won one, period. His career is not over even if he loses on Sunday. Peyton's legacy is not dead yet even if he loses. It's all very, very true. By the way, he says, I went to both AFC Championship games in Pittsburgh and feel that atmosphere both times were much harder than playing in a dome in Indy, which will speed one up everyone. Not just the Colts. Maroney should run wild. Dillon beat them on grass here. Maroney will run well and gain lots of yards. I think the Patriots, Lou, are probably going to bank on that very fact, to be quite honest with you. Let's see here. This one comes from Sandeep in India. Matchups this week. He's got his picks for each category. The Pats run defense against the Colts run offense. He gives the Pats to the edge to the Pats. I'm not reading too much into the way the Chargers ran the ball to their left directly at TBC. Indy's offensive line is not that great a run blocking line as the Chargers. Sandeep, I would kind of tend to agree with that, I think. As I consider that, Joseph Addai, of course, has become the top back. And even though he does have a little bit more of an ability, I think, to get the edge, I do think that they'll try to run at the Patriots. Pats pass defense against Colts pass offense. Major edge to the Colts, although in the November meeting, Samuel played on the right side of that defense covering Wayne. Now he's playing on the left side where he seems more comfortable without having any impact. Or will Harrison still have a great day? Mind you, Harrison does a better disappearing act in the playoffs than the great Manning himself. Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I'd be stunned if they don't try to go deep with either Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison or use one as a decoy for the other. You know, kind of run a pick-and-roll type of play. In other words, getting one receiver down deep in single coverage. I think they like their chances if they get either Wayne or Harrison in single coverage against the Patriots secondary. I think that's probably what they're going to be licking their chops for. Let's see. He also has Pats run offense versus the Colts run defense. He gives the edge to the Pats. By the way, he gave the Colts the edge with their pass defense against the Patriots. I'm not convinced about the Colts defense. Same as 2004 all over again, except it's the Colts defense this time. It was their offense that time. Colts played two crappy defenses in 04, never had to punt, only to put up three against the Pats. This time they played two offensive masterminds in Herm and Billick, and they stopped their offenses. Let's see. He gives the edge to the Pats and against the pass offense against the Colts pass defense. Special teams edge to the Colts. Any sane Pats fan will have to concede the AK factor gives the Colts the edge. You know what? I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. I don't agree there. I think the Patriots overall have the edge special teams wise. And let me tell you why. If you look at return yards in terms of what the Patriots are gaining on punt returns and kickoff returns, it's considerably better than what the Colts are getting in their punt and kickoff returns. Defensively, the Patriots are allowing less yards to the opponent in kickoff returns and punt returns than the Colts are as well. So I think if you're going to look at special teams, Sandeep, and anyone else who's listening here, if you're going to look at special teams, you've got to look at the entire picture. Now, I think we all realize that if we had to pick one in terms of kicking, we'd all go with Adam Vinatieri. With all due respect to Steven Gostkowski, he just hasn't been around as long, and hopefully in a few years we feel differently about him. He's had a pretty good year this year. He's had a pretty good year. And he did finally kick a game-winning field goal this last week. But I would tell you, that you've got to look at the big picture. And the Patriots were fourth in the NFL in kickoff returns. They averaged almost 12 yards per return on punt returns. The Colts were a good 3-4 yards per return behind the Patriots in kickoff returns, and they averaged under 10 yards per return in punt returns. So in terms of special teams, it's not quite the clear-cut edge to the Colts as you think it may be. And Sandeep says, my guess is it's a high-scoring game, however, with the Pats pulling away in the second half, 38-24. All right, so there you go. See, we got our first prediction of the day, 38-24. How do you feel about this game? Where is it going to come down to? Is it come down to the same old basics, field position, turnovers, penalties, miscues, big plays? Is there some other factor that we have not yet mentioned that you feel like it might be a major factor in this football game? We need your score predictions. Webradio@patriots.com. It's time to speak up or forever hold your peace. It might be all over after this Sunday. More emails coming up right here inside the playbook.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
Yeah! That's funny. Oh, goodness. Welcome back inside the playbook for Thursday. I don't know if you know this, if you happen to live in Indianapolis, but that's the way most in New England feel about this game. Oh, goodness. With all due respect, of course. Hey, I'm from the South. What do I know? But that's still pretty funny. Anyway, I don't know if you know this or not, but the NFL has come up with some good stuff in terms of trying to, you know, hey, they analyze, overanalyze, and underanalyze, and I mean, they do a lot of it because obviously when you're down to four teams, there's just, you know, only so much that they can talk about. But the playoffs so far this season, through the first two rounds, have been, according to the NFL now, the most competitive since the NFL went to the 12-team format in 1990. The average margin of victory in the eight wild card and divisional games was 7.3 points per game. Now, that doesn't sound like that's so low, right? Well, believe it or not, that's the lowest point margin since 1990. The previous low was 9.8 points per game in 2003. So this means basically each game in the playoffs through the first two rounds has been a one possession game down to the end, or just a fraction over a one possession game. I think that's the way it should be. I think the NFL would probably tell you that as well. What it certainly means is that, you know, parity in the NFL is winning out. That's why you get teams like the Saints, certainly, even though they've had a very good year. This is how they're able to finally thrive and work themselves into position to, you know, have a shot at a championship, as the Saints are in their very first NFC title game ever. This means now that I believe there are only two teams left in the entire 32-team NFL that have never played for a conference championship. You know who they are?
Arizona?
That's one.
Detroit?
No. Think more recent. You realize you probably have hundreds of people screaming at their computer screens right now. Houston. That's right. Houston and Arizona now are the only two teams in the 32-team NFL that have never played for at least a conference championship. That's kind of surprising, kind of stunning, don't you think? I mean, the Lions have a history that goes way back in the 1920s, so, you know, modern day, well, maybe not. Nevertheless, they have played for championships in the past. Those are the only two teams that have not. So, you know, with the Saints now being included in the NFC title game this weekend. The breakdown a little bit further from the NFL. New England, of course, in its third championship game in the past 4 years. Colts are playing in their second in the last 4 years. The combined winning percentage of the championship teams, the four remaining teams, is better than 75%, 757. Let's see. These teams are coming off a divisional playoff weekend in which all four games were decided by a grand total of 18 points. That's the fewest since the divisional round began back in 1970. Three of the four games were decided by 3 points or less. That's the first time that's ever happened in the divisional playoffs. Means we had a lot of nail biters, right? The top two passing offenses of 2006 are still alive, led by the two starting Pro Bowl quarterbacks, Saints, of course, and Drew Brees, who was number one, Colts and Peyton Manning, who, by the way, were number two overall in passing offense. The Saints, of course, went from worst to first in their division. They won it a year after finishing last. They are the first team in history to go to a championship game after losing 13 or more games the year before. I like that little factoid. That's a good one. We'll get into some more of this in about 25 minutes with Russell Baxter from ESPN. In the meantime, let's get back to some emails. By the way, once again, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. I need your score predictions, kids. I don't have many of them here. I got a few of them, but I don't have a lot of them. I'm going to get to some of the ones that came through from PFW in progress earlier. So if you haven't done so, you got to do it. Even if you have done it, let's hear it again because we're talking about it right now. I want to see what you think the score will be. going to try to see if I can figure out if we got a consensus here one way or the other. And then I'm going to give you mine before the end of the program today. This one comes from our friend Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Great Bill Polian story dating back to his days with the Bills front office in the early 1990s. Polian was quoted in the Atlanta papers as saying Syracuse wide receiver Rob Moore had abused the system by having requested and obtained a supplemental draft to the NFL after graduating in 4 years from Syracuse and just after the NFL regular draft had been completed. Well, as a Syracuse alum, I sent the clip with a negative quote about Moore to Orange football coach Dick McPherson, who, of course, later coached the Patriots. In any case, I was thinking that maybe our coach might get around to reading what I sent him and maybe get a slight chuckle out of it. But one day I pick up the phone, and the voice on the line says, "Hello, Al. This is Coach Mack." McPherson first politely thanked me for sending him the clip and then launched into a rather blunt description of various portions of Polian's anatomy. I don't know about Mack, but I sure enjoyed it. And Al says, "Pats win 27-13. How about that? You know, I happen to know Coach Mack personally as well, not only from his time, albeit brief, as head coach of the Patriots, but from his time at Syracuse and covering Big East football. He's a member of the Syracuse radio broadcast team now, and he's quite the character. But the one thing Coach Mack is, he is loyal. Man is loyal. So anybody that says anything bad about his guys, misguided or not, misinformed or not, is going to get reamed. So it doesn't surprise me at all, Al. That's a good story. Thank you. Michael says, "So, what is Seattle's first-round draft position now? Is it a decent pick that the Patriots will be picking up from Seattle? It's number 24. Their position has been set. So the Seahawks now have the 24th selection, which means the Patriots will pick 24th and somewhere later in the first round. It had better be, since they still have not found the replacement for Branch yet. Isn't this coming draft rich at the wide receiver position? If the Pats win it all, do you think Belichick might step aside? He would be leaving the team at the top with a bright future with some good young players and good draft picks in the upcoming draft." There's no shot of that happening. I don't see that happening. I don't. I think that, you know, he's still young and vibrant enough, and I still think he enjoys coaching to the point where I think we'd all be stunned if that really happened. So, no, I don't think he'll do that. I don't think he'll step aside as well. After all, I mean, if the Patriots win, that'll be 4 out of 6, and nobody, I mean nobody, has ever won 5 out of 7. Nobody. So you'll have an opportunity to come back next year and do something that no team has ever done and may ever do again. So in that regard, nah, that's not going to happen. As far as the upcoming draft rich at the wide receiver position, there are some very good potential receivers in the top, in the upper half of the draft, that the Patriots won't have an opportunity. Obviously, everybody would like to have a shot at a guy like Calvin Johnson from Georgia Tech, but they're not going to put those two picks together, and they're not going to trade up. I don't even think they get high enough to get them. What I think is more likely to happen, however, and this is where the Patriots really need the help, I think you realize that, you know, while having Johnson, someone who's 6'4", 6'5", and size like that would be a tremendous weapon for Tom Brady, I'm of the opinion that that's not necessarily what they need. I think if the Patriots decided to look wide out, I think what they need is a guy that can stretch the field and make the more the possession-type guys they have, Jabari Gaffney, Rishay Caldwell, make those guys more effective over the middle. So if you really want to go receiver, and again, I don't even know if this guy will be available, I'm thinking Ted Ginn Jr. from Ohio State, who has declared for the draft from the Buckeyes after his junior year. He is injury prone, but I think we've seen enough of Ginn where, provided he's healthy, I mean, obviously he's a tremendous threat at kick returns. Can you imagine kickoff returns with Ginn and Lawrence Maroney? Ooh-hoo! Can you imagine putting Ginn back at punt return? I mean, come on. You've got somebody who's like the human joystick, you know, at Kansas City that a couple of years back that was just, you've got a threat to go deep every time he touches the ball. And not to mention, you put him at wideout, he's going to stretch the field because defensive backs are going to be so worried about him. That's who I'd actually like to see the Patriots get, and I think they'd have more of a shot at getting a guy like Ginn than they would somebody else. My own personal thought, I don't think that they'll go offense in the first round. I think you'll see the Patriots most likely, especially if they don't go linebacker in free agency and look at a guy like Briggs from Chicago, which I think is the one pick that the Patriots should get in the offseason, one move they should make in the offseason. But I think you'll probably see linebacker, you'll probably see corner, You may even see offensive linemen again. I know it's not sexy. It's not spectacular. Again, these are just early thoughts off the top of my head. There'll be a lot of conjecture and a lot of consideration between now and the end of April before the draft. But my guess is that's probably what you'll see the Patriots do. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see them take Ginn with one of those two spots if they can get him. Michael, thanks for the email. Ron in Raymond, New Hampshire. It's nice to know that someone besides me noticed that Brady played like crap against the Chargers other than his last-minute heroics. If he plays like that this week, they're done. Hopefully they bring their A-plus game because they'll need it to win this one. Should be a great game. Brady plays like the Brady we're used to seeing, and the defense plays like they did last weekend. It's lights out for the Colts. Well, Ron, he did have a subpar game for the most part until the fourth quarter. I don't know that it's just the last minute. I think pretty much the last quarter he was more like the old Tom Brady. But you're right, the first three quarters I thought was average at best. It's because we built up this belief about Tom Brady that that anything short of spectacular play, we're let down. And again, Brady is a victim of his own success. The Patriots are victims of their own success. We're all spoiled. We all expect way too much. And I think if you look at it, try to look at it somewhat analytically, you realize, realistically speaking, that there are several Patriot players that have not had quite the overall individual years that maybe even they're capable of having. And maybe that's one of the reasons. Maybe that's the main reason why you've only got one Pro Bowl player on this team in Richard Seymour, even though, you know, you've got two or three others that were certainly worthy. But hey, all's well that ends well, because they used that whole Pro Bowl snub, I think, psychologically to their advantage last week against the Chargers. Jeremy in Newmarket, New Hampshire. The game this weekend is in the bag. The Patriots are better on paper and will win the game this Sunday. Okay, fair enough. In other news, did you read that Michael Vick was caught with wacky weed in a water bottle at Miami International Airport? Falcons are dead. The Vic experience has got to be over now. Yeah, I did see that. It was on ESPN.com and Sportsline and a couple of the websites. I guess he tried to, there was a false bottom in a water bottle. He tried to get through security. And without looking at the story, because I don't have it called up just yet, and I guess there was some marijuana or something contained within. Something like that. I don't know. So Ron Mexico, I think, may have gotten caught.
They stole my pot.
So I don't know that he's being charged with anything, but I think you're right. Actually, here's what I actually think will end up happening, in all honesty, Jeremy, because you've got a new coach coming in, Bobby Petrino. I think that he will, and they will, allow him to work for a year with Vic, because he is thought of as being basically an offensive mastermind, offensive whiz. I mean, you know, Louisville's had tremendous offensive teams the last few years under his, you know, guidance and leadership, and I think he'll give him a chance to work with Vic. And but I think he's on a very short leash. And if Michael Vick doesn't show signs of turning it around, if he doesn't turn it around outright, and by that I mean his numbers make him a threat from the pocket as well as with his legs, then I think you'll see the Falcons probably drop back and punt on the Michael Vick show and make him available via a trade next year, about this time next year. But I think there's another year here to go. Taylor's in California. Guys, listening to the show, I think you guys have forgotten that the Pats have lost to the Colts this past regular season in Indianapolis 27-20. No, it was here. I remember because I lost a bet and had to buy a Colts hat instead of a Patriots hat. And to all you guys who thought the Chargers were going to win, ha, 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 where's your faith? I understand about being realistic, as I predicted two of the four losses, Broncos and the Colts, regardless of my bet. I never bet against my team. I do have faith in them, and of course the Pats will beat the Colts this Sunday. Certainly good to be loyal, Taylor. Certainly good to be loyal. Rodrigo. Warren Moon picked the Colts in an interview on Cold Pizza, for whatever that's worth. I respect Warren Moon quite a bit, but you know what? Opinions are like, you know what? Everybody's got one. Do you guys think the Pats game is going to be a blowout, high scoring and close, or low scoring and close? I'll tell you right now, Rodrigo, I think I'm leaning more toward high scoring. And again, I thought that the Patriots and Chargers would be higher scoring than it was. I thought it would be about 34-31 instead of it was 24-21. The Colts' offense, for lack of a better phrase, has not really produced like we've seen them do. But I just kind of get the feeling that, you know, Manning is beginning to get into a comfort zone, and I think he'll try to pick on the Patriots secondary, and I think Brady's going to have a good time, and I think that the running game will have a good time, and so I actually believe that this game will probably pick up and probably be in that range of where I originally thought the Pat-San Diego game would be, probably in that higher 20s, low 30s, as opposed to being low 20s or teens. As far as the Bears and Saints, let me be honest here. I haven't looked at that as closely, simply because I've been focused on the game that the Patriots are going to play. We'll probably get into more of that with Russell in about 10 minutes or so. So I'm going to save that one for him because I know he's been paying attention this week. William, first of all, I agree with the assessment that the Pats will win, but I can't say it will be on the shoulders of Maroney and Dillon. Just like you said earlier, Bob Sanders is all over both runners when they hit the hole, and maybe I'm the only one who feels this way, but Dillon has lost a step. He isn't injured, but he still doesn't seem to hit the hole with any burst. And I'm not sure about the numbers, but I would be willing to bet a substantial number of his attempts have been for zero or negative yardage this season. With that in mind, do you still think Dillon and Maroney are going to gallop all over the Colts? I don't think you're going to gallop all over them. I do think that they will try to punish them. I don't think, you know, whether it's 100 yards or 140 or 150 yards like it was in November, I think it's a matter of semantics. I think that they will have some opportunity to make some plays. Gallop all over, well, to me, that would be running for probably over 150. And with that in mind, I don't think that will happen. Short of that, probably. Could it set the Patriots up? Yeah. But I also feel like the Patriots feel like their best chance to win is with Brady's arm rather than Dillon and Maroney's legs. Again, just my own thoughts. This one comes from Ryan in Boston. I was just wondering about Tom Brady's career record in domes. I have watched every Patriots game for the last 8 years or so, and I am a huge fan. I don't ever recall Brady and the Patriots losing in a dome since he has been a starter, yet everywhere I look, I see that his record in domes is 23-1. The only thing I can remember is a loss to Atlanta, the first game of this year's preseason, but I didn't think that the preseason would be counted in a record like this. If you could shed some light on this record for me, that would be great. Okay. I have to look at this up myself because I want to make sure that I have it accurately. I don't know that I have that one. Jason, do you know that one off the top of your head, what his record is in domes?
I believe he's 10-0.
Yeah, I think he's 10-0 too. I don't think he has lost. I think
everyone sucks but me.
I think the number that you're looking at is 23-1, and I think that's his number on artificial turf. Is that the one that's the artificial turf one? 23-1, I believe. I believe that's the case. I know he's 12-1 in the playoffs, but I think the 23-1 record, Ryan, is his number on artificial surfaces. But I believe he's 10-0 in domes. So, at any rate, he's got a pretty good track record, wouldn't you say, whichever way you look at it? Jay says, I realize it's late and this may not get answered. Do we know who's officiating the game on Sunday? I'm worried that Polian's whining will result in those ticky-tack illegal contact penalties being called. Those calls were ruining games during the regular season. No, I don't know who's officiating right off hand. I'm not sure that the NFL officially releases that anyway. I know that the Colts probably know, simply because they have to, you know, print timing sheets and two deep charts and things like that for the media to use, but I have not seen that yet. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't. Haven't gotten it yet. You're right about Polian probably already working over the officials, making sure they're aware of, you know, some of the, you know, 5-yard chuck things that have plagued the Patriots in the past. But even though I do think you'll probably see the Patriots press a little more. Than they had perhaps in November. I don't think you'll see that a lot. I think you'll see them probably give the Colts receivers room to make a grab and then hope that they can tackle more assuredly than they did in November and more assuredly than they've done at most stages of this season, and will allow them the opportunity to catch those balls, provided they don't burn them deeply. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it a little bit. Let's get to, aha, well, we got one here from Indianapolis. Way to go, Brett. Brett's in Indy. He says the Patriots' lack of talent is going to catch up to them. Now, Brett, when you say lack of talent, can you be a little bit more specific? Because I think even you, being the astute football fan that I'm sure you are, would have to realize that the Patriots don't have a lack of talent. I mean, after all, they are one of four teams remaining. Just like your Colts don't lack talent. They have talent. Now, is it a lack of talent compared to the Colts? Is it a lack of talent compared to who? And where is this perceived lack of talent that you're talking about? Brett says, there is a reason Brady threw such a fit about Branch leaving. They have accomplished a lot to get where they are, but the Colts are too much for them to keep up with. Manning's willingness to go to the check down or over the middle passes along with the running game, not to mention two Pro Bowl receivers, is a little too much for the Patriots. Well, the last part of your statement there, Brett, I can't disagree with, to be honest with you. He certainly does a great job of checking down. He goes up the middle, over the middle, whichever way you want to look at, finding the seam in a lot of the zone, a lot of the cover two that teams have run from time to time. Dallas Clark worries me over the middle, no doubt. Guy like Reggie Wayne worries me going over the top deep on the sideline with a guy like Marvin Harrison. I think that should worry anybody. Two Pro Bowl receivers? Absolutely. But I also believe that because they have those, I think Patriots secondary will feel somewhat slighted. And I think even you, again being the astute football fan that you are, would realize that Patriots are a better football team when they have a chip on their shoulder. I think they proved that last week, do you not? And let me also guess, Brett, that you were privately rooting for the Patriots to win for two reasons. Number one, because if the Patriots won, you'd have a chance to play at home, which you do now. So congratulations. Number two, you didn't want any part of the Chargers, because the Chargers are a better football team than the Colts.
We're back!
Yeah, that's what I think. So, at any rate, you could be right. You absolutely could be right. And I don't mind you rooting for your team. It's great. I'm glad you sent us the note. But lack of talent from the Patriots? Compared to who? Compared to what? Yeah, that's just, you're just fanning flames now. Bring something to the table here. Kevin says, I'm a huge Patriots fan. My first NFL and Pats game was against the Colts on November the 5th, which we lost. But we've made a few improvements altogether. But my question is, where can the Colts beat us? Or what is our weakness going into this game? Well, probably, I would say the biggest perceived weakness that I can see is what I just talked about in terms of the Patriots secondary matching up against the Colts receivers. Whereas the Pats were able to play press coverage a little bit more when they had a healthy Rodney Harrison and they had a guy who could be a lockdown corner in Ty Law a few years ago, the last time these two teams played, especially in an AFC Championship game, my thought here is that they can get burned deep because their corners don't cover as well. They're not bad, and that includes Samuel, not bad, but they're not what they had been. I think you'll still see them play off a little bit. And so whether or not the Colts decide to continue to pound away at that underneath soft belly of the Patriots' pass defense, if that's something they end up doing. And, of course, that becomes more effective if the Patriots' front three or front seven don't get pressure on Peyton Manning. So my biggest concern is over the middle, tight end, wide receiver curls, things like that. That's my biggest concern, and whether or not the Patriots play too soft defensively in that regard. I think that's where they could beat us, and I think that's the Patriots' weakness. Amir in Boxborough. John, I share some of your concern about Brady this week, but I disagree about the Pro Bowl. If you take into account what he has accomplished with this team this year, you see a body of work that exceeds any other quarterback in the league, with the exception of Manning. Tom's value has never been about his stats, but about how he manages to win games and how many people would be happy with a 12-4 record and a playoff win. Any takers in Detroit? Well, the problem with that, Amir, is that the Pro Bowl is decided before the playoffs. If you include the playoffs, there's no doubt. You're right. Brady would deserve to go. But they decide this before the playoffs get started. And so when you look at that body of work, I have to disagree with you respectfully. I am somewhat concerned about Tom's jet-setter life lately. He's right up there with Broadway Joe and the high-profile babes he dates. Okay, maybe I'm just jealous. Yeah. Gisele Bündchen? Good Lord. Can you believe that? Waiting outside the locker room this last weekend? You kidding me? Did you get to see that at all, Jace?
No, I was here.
Oh. Dude. Go get him. My real concern is the secondary, O-line, and passing game. Like you say, Tom is not throwing well, and the receivers are very ordinary. Also, the running game has been stagnant of late. I haven't seen Maroney bust off a big run in a long time. I think we need at least 100 yards of rushing to help burn the clock and keep the ball. Third down conversions are essential. I would agree with you there. Another big concern is that the Colts have the edge in pass defense. If you look at yards per catch allowed and passing scores allowed, Colts are second in the AFC in pass defense. Pats are seventh in the AFC. I'm not too worried about the kicking game. If the offense clicks, Gostkowski will be in position to make to have makeable kicks. I don't think he chokes in a dome. If he's forced to kick 50-yarders, well, sayonara. I don't think so either. I mean, he kicked the 50-yarder this last week against the Chargers. I don't think it's that big a deal. And I think he's probably got as much confidence now as he's had at any time in his very short professional career. Gostkowski is not a problem, folks. Of course, I say that now. He could go out and shank three. But, you know, I don't think that that's going to happen. Amir says, if I was betting money, I would bet on the Colts to cover the spread. But I'm not a betting man. I'm a Pats fan. I think the Pats win 27-14. Hope to hear you again next week. Same here, Amir. Appreciate the email. All right, let's pause here for a moment. Let's get in a quick break. We still got emails to get to. We still want you to send in your prediction for Sunday's game. If you haven't done it, send it in. Webradio@patriots.com. What's the score going to be? Where is this game going to be decided? How is this game going to be decided? If you're an expert, you're a football aficionado, you're listening online, you want to get the lowdown, you want to hear if you're a Colts fan, you want to hear what the enemy camp is thinking, well, great, fire it off. Let's hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com.
Breaks the tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autographed mini helmet limited to the first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford, bold moves.
Come on.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com radio for a Thursday. Pats 5-0 in AFC Championship games, going back to the Super Bowl era dating back to 1966. That's one number I'm sure that Patriots fans are fully familiar with, and they hope to make that 6-0 after this Sunday against the Colts. And for more on the numbers, Mr. Numbers himself, the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, Russell Baxter. Good afternoon, Russell. How's it going this week?
We're doing good, John. As I said last week, I fully intended on speaking with you this week.
Well, I think you were correct.
Yes. Now, actually, I was I did okay with the AFC, so we got what we I think we got what a lot of people were kind of hoping for.
Well, we did get one of those knockdown, drag out, exciting affairs right to the very end. I'm not sure that we expected it to turn out the way that it turned out in the way that the game was actually played. But nevertheless, I think the end result is what a lot of people thought it would be. At least it would be close, and it would just be one or two things that would happen at the end that would cause one team to overcome the other.
Well, it was an interesting second weekend of playoffs, and I guess field goals were the topic of the weekend, because if you think about it, three of the four games were decided by a field goal, while the first game was decided with all field goals.
Right.
So, you know, it was the dream week for the Rockets, I guess, when it came to kicking.
How surprising was it, though, to see the Colts-Ravens game decided on nothing but seven field goals?
I think if you were the Ravens, you had to be very surprised. I think the Colts have learned, and it happened on more than one occasion this year. Even though in games they scored touchdowns, wins over the Giants at the Meadowlands, wins over the Broncos in Denver. I think the Colts got very acclimated this year to knowing that they don't have to score touchdowns all the time, because they know what the New England Patriots knew for 10 years, especially even more so for the last 5 years. We got a pretty good weapon in Adam Vinatieri. And again, there's nothing wrong with for settling for field goals, because when it comes to consistency, few can match him. Now the all-time leader in postseason field goals, with 34 in 19 games. It just speaks to his consistency. And, that pressure of having to drive for a touchdown, mm-hmm. I don't think it really exists anymore, for the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, their offense this year was not prolific, to say the least, and certainly not on the field as much, due to their defense, but their defense, to say the least, has been one of the big stories of this 2006 postseason.
Yeah, it has been. And I guess the one thing that I've questioned, and I know our Patriots Football Weekly guys have questioned, and probably a lot of fans and a lot of media, for that matter, questioning as well, I mean, how can the Colts go through the regular season like they did, allowing over 170 yards on the ground, and then completely turn it around with two playoff games? I mean, the answer's got to be somewhere in the middle, doesn't it?
Well, I think there's a simple explanation. Is the greatest job of disguising your coverage is through 17 weeks that I've ever seen. Ever.
Well, that's a hell of a job. I guess, boy, they really and they went way out on that, didn't they?
Oh my! I mean, let me throw these out, okay? Because these are numbers that are almost funny if you think about it. The Colts have given up a combined 14 points in two games in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up 14 or fewer points twice in 16 games this season.
Right.
They've given up a combined 127 yards rushing in two playoff games.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up 127 or fewer yards rushing in four games all year. And even the defense that was not on the field in terms of rushing the passer as much. You know, their sacks were way down because, as I always like to say, why fly when you can drive? You know, the Colts faced 519 rushing plays this year, John, which was second only to the Oakland Raiders. And we know how bad their offense was. That was, think about it, the Oakland Raiders defense was on the field most of the season and were 2-14. The Colts were on the field, you know, pretty much as much. And I'm a rushing attempts guy. I'm not a time of possession guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yet they were 12-4, which speaks to volumes to just the way they played as a team. But anyway, cut to the chase. They forced only 26 turnovers during the regular season. They have seven takeaways, in their two playoff games. And, it's been, well, I mean, it's almost unexplainable in these playoffs. I mean, you look at a lot of different things that we've seen with the teams that have made it so far. The Bears, whose defense kind of wilted down the stretch, played about the game you thought they would play against Seattle. They actually had to win it with their offense. New Orleans Saints have won most of the year with their offense, but their defense makes just enough plays to get it done. The New England Patriots, as I like to say, don't physically beat teams up. They just mentally beat teams up. And I think they did a mental beat-up job on the San Diego Chargers because they played so much smarter football than they did in that game in San Diego. Now, all the numbers belong to San Diego, except for one, which is the most important. But the Indianapolis Colts' defensive performance is downright mystifying. Now, that being said, they faced the league's probably best downhill runner in Larry Johnson. They faced a really good straight-ahead runner in Jamal Lewis last week. Corey Dillon might not do the cutbacks he used to, but Lawrence Maroney, I think, is the guy to really keep an eye on in this game.
Mm-hmm. Only because you feel like the Patriots...
Well, that ability to cut back, I think, the ability to cut back, John, was the thing that plagued their run defense all year. Okay? They had more cutbacks than a bad budget. If you looked at the game against Jacksonville, or even the game against... Well, take your pick. Take your pick. The cutback running against the Colts plagued them all year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because it's a fine line, you know. They want their defense to rely on their speed. And yet, you could accuse the Colts for most of the year against the run of over-pursuing a lot of times. They gave up over 1,000 more yards rushing than they did last season. And their defense was somewhat respectable last year, but... I mean, if they make it to the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl, I mean, they're going to go in with a number that is just unbelievable. It's hard to fathom that a team gave up that much rushing yards during a regular season,
right?
And got away with it. So,
okay.
But perhaps, after 9 years of pretty much carrying this franchise and having a lot of substandard defenses, maybe the defenses are going to finally carry the Colts and Peyton Manning. To maybe a Super Bowl. I mean, you know, it'd be the irony of ironies. And, you know, we keep on seeing this in the league, more of a league perspective here. With the Chargers bowing out, it's going to be the eighth time in the last 10 years that the team with the best regular season record or tied for the best regular season record will not win the Super Bowl.
Right, right. I think it definitely that's something that, we talked about before. Now, this all being said, do you feel like a lot of the national media seems to feel in terms of the Colts being a destined team now with the Chargers out of the Derby?
No, I do not get that sense at all. I get the sense that this is going to be a toss-up game. That's really the kind of sense I get, John. Because you are talking now, and I think we alluded to this last week, what I now call a dynasty in New England, being there every year, 4 championships games in 6 years, playoffs 4 years straight and 5 of the last 6. It's now the excellence combined with the longevity, okay? They are the perennial powerhouse of this league, and they're back there again. And some people think they couldn't believe they got back there again. I think if you go back and look when they got shut out at home against at Miami, 21-0, everybody's, they don't have enough weapons. They can't stretch the field, yada, yada, yada. Well, guess what? They found another way to get there, and they're within the fringe of getting there for the 4th time. In 6 years. I don't think the national media thinks that the team, I think if you're going to assign a team of destiny, I think more people read that into the Saints than they do the Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cause what a story that would be.
There's no doubt.
To say the least, I mean, you know, there are stories and then there are, you know, just amazing stories. And that would be a team that won 3 games last year is 60 minutes away from getting to the Super Bowl for the first time in franchise's history.
And when you, of course, combine that with all of the tragedy of the southern part of the United States with Katrina a year ago, I mean, how about the Colts, you know, trying to celebrate getting to, you know, a Super Bowl if they get there, and then all of a sudden finding themselves overwhelmingly being not the fan favorite because of the Saints' overall story here. I think
that's a little bit of an
irony.
The funny thing is when you get down here, you can almost look at the 4 teams and you start thinking, you know, what are going to be the plot lines of the 4 teams, regardless of what the matchups are. The nostalgia of the Chicago Bears, the probably the sentimental vote for the New Orleans Saints, probably the sigh of relief for the Indianapolis Colts, and business as usual for the New England Patriots.
Right.
So, in any case, you know, you got 4 in really, really potential intriguing matchups. And, let's keep in mind here, the other 4-3 teams, you know, this is obviously with the Patriots winning 3 titles in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts haven't won a Super Bowl since Super Bowl V. That was the 1970 season. The Bears, 1985. which, you know, we kept on hearing the words 1985 for half this year.
Right.
And, of course, the New Orleans Saints, who have had seven winning seasons and have never gotten this far, have never won a Super Bowl, one of six franchises currently in the league, not even to reach the Super Bowl. So the plot lines will be thick regardless of who gets there.
Right. I know that, you know, certainly where the Colts and the Patriots are concerned, there's, you know, it seems to be a rule rather than the exception of familiarity in the AFC Championship game, because I think it's what, since 1990, when the 12-team playoff format came into play, this is what, the 11th time that teams who met in the regular season are going to meet again for the championship?
Yeah, familiar. Well, because it goes to show, it just goes to show you that, you know, with the way the schedule comes out and so on now, the fact that you get a lot of teams that are division champions who play each other, et cetera, they do wind. And it was almost like it was expected this to happen. You know, and we've seen this throughout different decades. You know, in the 90s, it was, if it wasn't Dallas and San Francisco playing each other, it was San Francisco and Green Bay playing each other. Back in the 70s, if it wasn't Miami playing Oakland, it was Oakland playing Pittsburgh. You know, or if it wasn't Dallas playing the Rams, was the Rams playing Minnesota, or was Dallas playing Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have these stretches. And, you know, what makes impressive the fact that, you know, New England's in the playoffs five times in 6 years. Indianapolis is in the playoffs seven times in 8 years. You know, in this day and age, that consistency, you don't find it as often because you're always seeing somebody new in the playoffs. You see, every year you see a long playoff drought end. There's only a handful of teams that have not been in the playoffs since 2002, since the league realigned, since we went to four divisions. So to be there year in and year out, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, I got a couple of oddities here that I'm sure that you're aware of. The fact that the Patriots have made the championship game here without either a 1,000-yard rusher or a receiver. They'll try to become the first team since they did it themselves in 2003 to advance to the Super Bowl without a 1,000-yard rusher or receiver. Yet the Colts are the sixth team, just the sixth team since 1980, to advance to their conference championship with a 4,000-yard passer, 2,000-yard receivers, and a 1,000-yard rusher. So I'm curious to note how the previous five teams with that kind of superb offense fared in those championships.
Well, off the top of my head, I'd have to look at who they are, but usually when it comes to offense, it's usually the defensive teams that have always excelled in the Super Bowl.
Right.
That's something just to keep in mind. You know, I can remember, I believe the year that the Green Bay Packers beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, okay, they didn't have a 1,000-yard runner or a 1,000-yard receiver.
That is correct. In
fact,
the Packers and the Patriots are the only two teams to have done that.
Right. And, you know, so, you know, stuff like that, it is very, very rare that you see stuff like that, but, as I'm biding time here to dig something up for you, you will find out a lot of times that defense seems to rule. You know, remember a couple of years ago we had a great matchup with the Oakland Raiders and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
mm-hmm.
and it was, you know, here's the top-rated offense in the league, here's the top-rated defense in the league, how's it all going to pan out? You never know. Well, here's what I know.
Let's go back
to the Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
The team that got to the Super Bowl allowing the fewest points in the league. Now, that's not going to happen this year because Baltimore,
right.
Okay. And it's also not going to happen this year as far as the team that scored the most because San Diego led the league in scoring.
Right.
But just sort of give you an idea of something here. The team that gave up the fewest points, and the last team to do it, by the way, the Patriots in 2003 when they beat Carolina. If a team giving up the fewest points in the league gets to the Super Bowl, their record in the Super Bowl is 12-4.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Yep.
If a team that led the league in scoring gets to the Super Bowl, their record in the Super Bowl, 9-10.
Really?
Yes. I think that would surprise some people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Teams that led the league in total offense got to the Super Bowl, 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that led the league in total defense got to the Super Bowl, 7-3.
Hmm.
So,
You definitely favored the defensive team.
Well, right? Absolutely. And right. Listen, when it comes to points allowed, I believe the New England Patriots were second in the league.
Yes, they were.
Who set a team record, I believe, for 237.
Right.
Which is a record for a 16-game season for them, besting by 1 point the team that gave up 238 in 2003 and won Super Bowl 38.
Correct.
That was one thing about the Patriots this year. They got back to the kind of defense where they didn't give up a lot of points. They got back to taking away the football. That's the kind of thing you didn't see from them last year. Remember last year they had 18 takeaways in 16 games, which was half as many as they had in the 2004 season. So they've done a real, real good job of taking away football. And remember, when they played the Colts early this year, even though Brady had the four interceptions and New England coughed up the ball five times, I believe they intercepted Manning twice in that game.
Right.
So, you know, they're, it's not like Peyton has lit them up the last two games, although I'm sure we're going to talk a little about Mr. Marvin Harrison, who the last two times these teams have met has put up really, really big numbers.
Yeah, he's had obviously great games against the Patriots. I'm going to answer that original question about the Colts and their offense. Last team to have 4,000-yard passer, 2,000-yard receivers, and 1,000-yard rusher. The team since 1980 to do that. The Rams in 01 lost
the
Super Bowl.
Which lost to the Patriots.
Right. The Rams in 99 actually won the Super
Bowl. Which beat Tennessee.
But they're the only one. The other three teams were the 89 Rams. They lost in the NFC title game.
To the Niners handily, by the way, 30-3.
The 86 Redskins lost their championship game.
17-0 to the New York Giants in the Meadowlands.
And the 81 Chargers lost the AFC championship game.
The 81 Chargers lost, got frozen out in Cincinnati at minus 59 wind chill, 27-7.
How about that? So there you go. There's the track record of teams with, you know, overpowering offenses.
Right. Well, I mean, that shows you, you know, when you get down to this stage of the game, you know, listen, I always talk about it all the time. The New England Patriots won their first Super Bowl scoring three offensive touchdowns in three postseason games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And people forget that. Tom Brady ran for a touchdown in the snow against Oakland. They got three field goals. Tom Brady got hurt in the AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh. Drew Bledsoe came in and threw a touchdown pass, but Troy Brown returned a punt for a touchdown. I believe Antoine Harris returned a blocked field goal off a lateral from Troy Brown.
Correct.
And that was three touchdowns. And then we get to the Super Bowl. Brady had two drives, one for a touchdown, one for a field goal. And some guy named Ty Law returned an interception for a touchdown. So
some guy named
you
Ty
actually Law. Had three offensive touchdowns, three defensive/special teams touchdowns, and a boatload of field goals from Adam Vinatieri, and it all added up to a Super Bowl championship.
Right. So do you think this will come down to a Vinatieri kick like a lot of Patriots fans are fearing at this stage?
Well, the drama would be thick, and there's no question about it. And I'll let me throw out this one as well, because obviously Adam Vinatieri, who was a little banged up this year, but still managed to kick. He's kicked in the RCA Dome 14 times now, 7 with the Patriots, and now 7 with the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Vinatieri has never missed a kick at the RCA Dome.
Right,
47-47 PATs, 25-25 field goals. Now that being said, we saw Adam Vinatieri miss two field goals at Foxborough when these teams played each other. So maybe even the psychological effects of this game can get to somebody who's considered the greatest clutch kicker of all time. I think it would be thick with drama if it did come down to that. But somehow, you know, what we want and what happens usually doesn't happen, as you well know. You know, we want our Hollywood scripts, and a lot of times we wind up with a rerun. So, This one's a tough one to call because, you know, first off, the Colts, just so people know, it's the first time the Colts have hosted the AFC Championship game.
Right.
Since the Baltimore Colts did it in 1970.
Ooh, really?
Okay.
Gotta go back to 1970.
1970. And I'll tell you how long ago that was. That not only did the Colts play in Baltimore, but the Oakland Raiders, who they beat that day, were good. Okay? So that should tell you about how long.
Kidding.
That was. It was the first year of the merger, and it was the last Super Bowl championship for the Baltimore Colts or the Colts franchise and so on. So it's been a long time since they've hosted this game. They've been to the game, obviously. They've been to the game. They were there in 1995 in Pittsburgh. They were there in 71 in Miami and got beat by a Dolphin team that went to the Super Bowl and then lost to the Cowboys. I know you remember that one because it was the Cowboys' first championship. You know, they got there in 2003 and I believe it was 5 Adam Vinatieri field goals, which they know about from last week, and some good defense and Ty Law derailed them as they tried to get there again. You know, it's all set up for the Indianapolis Colts. But I have to, I will just say this. I picked New England for the year. I'm going to stick with that.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I'm going to stick with that because I pride myself on being consistent.
Sure.
Would I be surprised if Indianapolis finally got it done? Absolutely not. But I'm telling you something. This is a big hurdle to overcome. And I'm telling you, what the New England Patriots do more than anything else is they, I know the game is 60 minutes, John. Mm-hmm. They make the game seem like it's 2.5 hours. And I know it's 3 hours real time, but they make it seem like it's 2.5 hours on the field.
Right.
Okay? They remind me of the Dallas Cowboys when Roger Staubach was there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You never felt comfortable until the clock said 0:00. You never felt comfortable. I mean, think about it. Okay? When Roger came in, you didn't care if there was 20 seconds left. If the game was over, the game was over. There was 20 seconds left. He's allowed to throw a Hail Mary pass downfield to Drew Pearson. And there's a lot to be said for what they make you think. They mentally drain you. That's what the New England Patriots do. Because they play the game so smart. They don't headbutt people. They don't do the little things that wind up being costly. They're always out there thinking. They're always out there hustling. And like I said, they mentally beat you up. And this will be a big hurdle for the Colts, you know, because I'm just going to say they have to do it to prove it. Okay? And they haven't done it yet, so we shall see what happens.
Should we spend a minute talking about the NFC game?
Well, yeah, if you'd like, that's totally up to you. But,
well, I think we all realize.
I mean, listen, this has got this has got plot lines in a different regard. It's one of the great stories that we've seen in recent times.
Right.
It's also one of the hallowed franchises of the league. It's a great comeback story by Drew Brees, who had a bad shoulder at the end of last year and wound up leading the league in passing yardage. All I will say is this, even if the Bears' defensive line was healthy, the best-kept secret in these playoffs. Now, the Colts are not a secret because everybody's watching play defense. The best-kept secret of the four teams in these playoffs, John, is the New Orleans Saints offensive line,
mm-hmm.
led by Jamal Brown, who was not only a Pro Bowler but voted All-Pro. And, you know, a number – in fact, every starter – and I guess they adopted this name. I mentioned this in on one of the other shows almost in passing. But apparently they took it not from me, but – someone had a little fun with it. I guess they call themselves the OJs because everybody's first name begins with a J.
Hmm.
Okay, you got Jamal Brown, you got Jahari Evans, you got Jamar Nesbitt. That was last year's Saints. Even the guys who left there begin their first name with J's. But, I mean, this has been a unit that has been very, very impressive. They've cut their sacks almost. You know, the Saints threw the ball more than they did last year,
right.
And they went from 41 sacks to 23, okay? But here's something to really keep in mind. A young receiving core, obviously Deuce McAllister, obviously Reggie Bush. You know, the Bears, who have given up 11 touchdown passes in the last five games, only gave up 8 in the first 12, by the way.
Right.
The New Orleans Saints led the league this year in 30-plus yard pass plays with 28. A year ago, this team only managed 12 of those plays.
Wow.
Okay? They're getting better pass protection. Better play from the receivers. I think Joe Horn might play this week. He did not play last week.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite stat when it comes to these championship games. The last time both home teams won was 1996.
Wow.
The last time both road teams won was 1997. So we actually have a better shot at the both road teams sweeping than the home teams. And I'm going to go with the New Orleans Saints. I'll go with the sentimental favorite.
Wow.
But I just think they're playing better than the Chicago Bears are right now.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I know that the Saints also don't fear the road. They were 6-2 away from home this year. So,
well, not only 6-2, they've won their 6-2, won their last three road games, and scored 30 or more points in 6 of those 8 road games.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. So, a team that got used to being away from home for the whole year, and how ironic would it be? The New Orleans Saints, who last year played home games in San Antonio,
mm-hmm.
Baton Rouge, and even a home game in the Meadowlands
right
after Katrina. You know, when it comes to the Super Bowl, the quote-unquote home team, John, is done on a rotating basis. It's the NFC's turn. So actually, in irony of ironies, if the Saints win, they would be, again, the home team in a different stadium
mm-hmm.
for Super Bowl 41.
How about that? Here's something else for you. I bet you probably know this. I don't mean to put you on the spot. But Reggie Bush can become the fourth Heisman winner to play in a Super Bowl in his rookie year should the Saints win. Do you know who the last one was?
Oh, the last one. I know Tony Dorsett. Tony Dorsett might have been. Well, Tony Dorsett was not the first one.
Tony Dorsett is the only one to have won the Super Bowl
right.
ring.
Oh, okay.
Year after
all right.
Because
I know, right off the top of my head, I've been trying to think of the guys who, like Mike Garrett was a Heisman Trophy winner.
He was also one.
Right.
So there's only
now,
one.
Mike Garrett was around for Super Bowl IV.
Right.
But I think he might have been a rookie for Super Bowl I.
He was, 1966.
Okay. But so, he then wound up winning one and so on.
That is correct.
But
there's one more recent. The answer that I'm looking for here than Dorsett in 77.
More recent than Dorsett in 77, right?
Yep.
You said?
Yep.
Well, we know it's not Vinny Testaverde.
No.
The year right after.
I knew I shouldn't have put you on the spot.
That's all right. Let me know when we run out of tape.
So. For you,
position.
We never run out of tape.
position?
Running back.
It is a running back. Of
yep.
course, it's a running back.
Yeah, most Heisman.
See, I'm just thinking of guys who were Heisman. Like George Rogers was a Heisman winner who,
nope.
not as a rookie,
nope.
who ended up playing for the Redskins eventually.
Right.
Let's see. You're
gonna
obviously, Barry Sanders never got there.
You're going to kick yourself over this.
And I know it's not Charles Woodson
nope.
because that happened after the fact.
Right.
Okay.
Ron Dane. Giants in 2000.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Ron Dane was the
last
one.
That's pretty good.
So Bush now can become the fourth to play on the Super Bowl in his rookie year, the last being Dane, and then the only one to have won it was Dorsett.
Well, Dorsett, if I also remember right, I think the reason Tony Dorsett sticks in my mind was Tony Dorsett also won a national championship the year he won the Heisman.
That's also true, yeah.
Okay, so he went from winning a national championship to winning a Super Bowl championship, and I believe the following year, didn't he win the World Series?
yeah.
Okay.
yeah, sure.
And then the World Series of Poker,
yeah,
then
right.
the Stanley Cup,
that's
and
right.
then, you know.
That's right. So you think it's going to be Pats and Saints?
I'm going to go with Pats and Saints.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Pats and Saints. It'll be a new Super Bowl, New England versus New Orleans.
That's very true.
That being said, let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's play this out on the field. Mm-hmm. Russell, thank you again for everything that you've done for us throughout the course of the season, and hopefully we get to do it at least one more week.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, John.
That's Russell Baxter again as the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us as he does here inside the Playbook on Thursdays. All right, let me get to some other emails that have come rushing into the inbox since we began our conversation with Russell, and then we'll get to Patriots coach Bill Belichick, his latest news for you from here at Gillette Stadium as the team practiced in the bubble again today here at Gillette, the Dana-Farber workout facility. And by the way, the music.
Dana-Farber Fieldhouse.
Fieldhouse, whatever. Workout facility. Fieldhouse.
Sponsors,
thank
on.
You. I did say Dana-Farber. I just don't normally call it a fieldhouse. The music was blasting today. I mean, as I came walking up earlier this afternoon, I mean, they were going full guns. And I think Guns N' Roses was a little part of the action in there today, believe it or not. So they were definitely getting ready for the noise in the RCA Dome, without a doubt today. I mean, it was you could really hear it. All right, let's go. Here we go. This one comes from, this is Saeed in Los Angeles. Hey, Saeed. Patriots will win 31 to the Colts 17. Colts are fast, but they're a small team that can and will be worn down if Maroney and Dillon are used correctly. Also, New England's wideouts and Brady are on the same page, whereas they were not on the same page in November. And this will keep the Bobby Sanders back in coverage and less on the line. I think that's a very good point, Saeed. I really do. If he's back in coverage, I think that's where the Patriots can make some hay, especially with Lawrence Maroney, as Russell just told us, being able to cut back. So I think that's a huge factor. We got an email back again from Brett in Indy, who said the Patriots' lack of talent was going to cost them. And he says, Seymour is the only Patriot in the Pro Bowl. Well, yeah, and how did that work for him last week against the Chargers? Also, Jabbar Gaffney and Rashay Caldwell are not even number two receivers on most teams. Well, that's hard to say unless you actually put them on other teams, Brett. You're only supposing they wouldn't be number twos on most teams. You said yourself that the secondary could be picked apart by Manning. They could, but they also could not. You also said that they would go after a linebacker in the draft, which tells me there might be a hole in that area. Well, Brett, if you know anything at all about the Patriots, you understand that depth is as important to this organization as it is to who starts. So it isn't so much who starts as who finishes. Patriots have been able to become a 3-out-of-5-year dynasty such as it is because of their overall depth, and they do need more depth. There's not necessarily a hole there. Patriots have proven they know how to win under these circumstances in the past, so hopefully for you that holds true. I just think the worst knock on the Colts was the defense against the run and as a whole. And that seems to be taken care of in the last two playoff games. So he says, Colts will win 27-17. All right, Brett, thank you. I'm not buying your argument, but thank you anyway. Mike in Columbus, Ohio. John, there's a bunch of writers, Lynn Pascarelli for one, that seem to be wishing for an ironic Adam Vinatieri game-winning field goal. My prediction will play on the ironic possibility that the Patriots will win 20-3 again, with Vinatieri kicking a field goal with 7 seconds to go to prevent a shutout. Believe me, if by some chance he's a chance to kick a field goal with 7 seconds left and they're down 20-0, he won't kick it. Howard in Orange, Connecticut. Okay, having listened to all the opinions flying around for the last few days, I still don't have a clue as to what is going to happen this Sunday, other than the fact that I think the Pats are going to win. Wow, big revelation. I think the Patriots' D is going to control the Indy rushing offense even better than it did the first time when it only got 53 yards. I think the Indy O is going to get their yards to the air but stall when they get near the red zone on more than one occasion and have to settle for field goals in those cases, which I think Vinatieri nails. I also think Peyton has at least one INT. Let's see. I think the Patriots O will do a better job protecting the ball. Brady will not have four picks, perhaps one or none at all. Daniel Graham was out last time. I think he will not only help in the running game with the blocking, but will come up huge in the passing game, showing why he's the best tight end on this team and needs to be re-signed in the offseason. I think the NDD will initially stuff the Patriot rushing game with a mixture of screens and short dink and dunks with a wide receiver core that is much more up to speed now than it was the first go-around, will cause the Indy defense to have to stop, will have to drop the safeties out of the box and open up the running game. That's actually one that I do agree with all the way around, guys. I think the Pats take one to the house, either on D or on special teams. I think this is one of those games where every facet of the Patriots team contributes to scoring, very reminiscent of the 03-04 Super Bowl teams. I don't think this is going to be a defensive struggle. I said the same thing about San Diego, and look what that got me. But I think it'll be 38-31 or 35-28 Patriots. Margin of victory I see being anywhere from 4-10 as the Pats punch their ticket for Miami. Thank you, Howard. John in Grand Junction, Colorado. My prediction is for an up-and-down and back-and-forth barn burner. Both teams start out sluggishly and then move the ball. Pats 28, Colts 27. Adam doinks the game-winning 50-yarder off the right upright. Now that would be poetic justice, wouldn't it? Ron in Raymond, New Hampshire chimes in again. Just wanted to give Brett a high five for his optimism. Lack of talent? I have to laugh at that. Man for man, the Patriots have that one hands down. He says Patriots 34, Colts 12. How's that for lack of talent, Brett? Let's see. Here we go. Irene in Tampa. I'll leave it to others to dissect the upcoming game concerning the Pats and Colts' strengths and weaknesses. While I like to think I know a lot about the game itself, I'm always surprised at what the Pats come up with to win games. I'm certainly not ready for this roller coaster ride to be over, so I'll be there yelling at my TV on Sunday for the Pats to win, and I think they will. I also want to thank you, John, for allowing the fans to have a voice, even when some of us don't sound very football smart. Over the last few seasons, I've had the pleasure to be one of your last emailers when the season has come to an end, but not this week. I'm glad you brought that up, Irene. Not until we've had the chance to at least compete for another Super Bowl in 07. Thanks to John. Thanks to Gary for the great music and sound effects. And go Pats. All right, Irene. Thank you for contributing to the program throughout the year. And hopefully we got another week or two to contribute here. Brad sends one. He says that he's a longtime Colts fan originally from Baltimore, now in Indiana. So I'll try to subdue my bias. The Colts-Patriots rivalry is now at fever pitch with this AFC Championship game being hosted by the Colts. I'll be there cheering on my beloved team. The Colts' defense has improved greatly the past 2 weeks. They didn't play horribly during the regular season. I know they allowed far too many rushing yards. But it was due to some key people missing games, and some still are. But Dungy and his staff have made the right changes for the playoffs, and the D is getting the job done. You know, no arguing what they've done the last 2 weeks. If they can do it one more week, then they get all the credit. There's no doubt about that, and I really believe that. Brad also says this will hold the Pats running game in check, and the Colts secondary is second to the AFC in pass defense. The Colts offense is the top-rated AFC passing offense, second in scoring, respectable in rushing, and have a clutch place kicker. If the Colts rushing attack can be just effective enough to get single coverage once in a while on our two Pro Bowl receivers, we can get some big gains. And if the Pats rush the passer, we can pass over the middle of the slant routes or the skinny post down the center. He says Colts 27, Patriots 17. Thank you, Brad. Alex is going to send me a joke that is making the rounds today. I got to look through it real quick. oh, okay, I want to make sure it was clean and I can use this. I know it's the internet, but, you know, hey, we do have standards around here. All right, he says, Peyton Manning, after living a full life, died. When he got to heaven, God was showing him around. They came to a modest little house with a faded Colts flag in the window. This house is yours for eternity, Peyton, said God. This is very special. Not everyone gets a house up here. Peyton felt special indeed and walked up to his house. On his way up the porch, he noticed another house around the corner. It was a three-story mansion with a silver and blue sidewalk, a 50-foot-tall flagpole with an enormous Patriots logo flag, and in every window, a New England Patriots towel. Peyton looked at God and said, God, I'm not trying to be ungrateful, but I have a question. I was an all-pro quarterback. I hold many NFL records, and I even went to the Hall of Fame. God said, so what's your point, Peyton? He said, well, why does Tom Brady get a better house than me? God chuckled and said, Peyton, that's not Tom's house. It's mine. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Thank you, Alex. We're going to kind of wrap it up, I think, with that here. But before we say sayonara, we are going to let you hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who will bring you up to date on the workouts today. Also address the initial injury report, which was as lean as I think we've seen it since probably the first week of the season. Maybe as lean as we've seen it, as short as we've seen it all year long when the injury report first came out yesterday. And you can update the refresh your browser for the update just as it comes to us probably just after 4 o'clock Eastern time today. And, of course, should the Patriots win the football game on Sunday, we'll be back here again next week for another round of Patriots Playbook. Should they not win the game, well, then we'll join you again for those of you that are here, most likely for the draft day party in April, and then we'll be back with the playbook again as the next football season rolls around. So there you go. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. My prediction for Sunday right now is going to be I'm going to take Patriots 27, Colts 23. Patriots 27, Colts 23. I did say that whoever won the Patriots-San Diego game would probably win the Super Bowl. So I'm going to also predict the Pats and the Saints in the Super Bowl. I'll go out on a limb and say the Saints beat the Bears and win on the road. And so the Patriots will play New Orleans in Miami. And because the Saints haven't been there yet, even though I respect the heck out of Drew Brees, I think that he's a tremendous quarterback, I think the Patriots become world champions for the fourth time in 6 years. Probably not the most talented of any of the four Patriot teams that will have won championships. But as I've mentioned several times over the last week or two, this team seems to adapt as well as any and adjust as any team I have seen in recent memory, maybe even ever. And so this team's best attribute is the fact that it is chameleon-like. In its attributes. Other teams may have been more physical. Other teams may have strived defensively. Other teams may have been more spectacular on offense or even special teams. But this team adjusts. This is like the spandex Patriots. They expand when they need to. They retract when they need to. You know, that's what I think the one key factor that this team has over any other right now in the NFL is they adjust and they know how to do it. Injury report just came out, so here is the update for you before we get to Coach Belichick. No change from yesterday, although Rodney Harrison, and we mentioned this during PFW earlier today, Harrison was present at practice today for the Patriots. Until the media was shooed out, we didn't see him do anything but stretch, but he was there. He is still listed as doubtful. Troy Brown, Ryan O'Callaghan, and Mike Wright are still listed as questionable with the flu. Tom Brady probable with his shoulder. The Colts, Ryan Deem, Nicholas Harper, Cato June, Ryan Lilja, Ricky Prohl, Bob Sanders, all still listed as questionable today. There you go, the updated injury report for both sides. Here's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick with more.
Okay, well, we're plugging along here. Just watching the Colts on third downs. Pretty impressive, really. Nobody does it better than they do offensively. They set the standard during the regular season this year, and of course in the playoffs. Defensively, they've shut two teams down to almost nothing. So I'm sure that'll be a big factor in the game, and as it always is, a very important part of the game. So hope to try to put a little extra work in on that, and but we'd be competitive in that area.
Phil, when you look at Brewski's and Troy Brown's careers here, do you see obviously they play totally different positions, but do you see a similarity in terms of what they've done here, how they've risen up as Patriots, and what they've meant to the franchise?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there's a lot. They probably have a lot more in common as a comparison than some other guys you could name. So, yeah, both, you know, tough, hardworking guys that set a great example. They're great players, set a great example for everybody else, and put the team first. They're good to coach. They're good to work with, and I'm glad we have them.
Bill, I would assume a big part of your preparation is try to be third and manageable, you know, when you're working on third down. What is third and manageable? Is there a yard, you know, third and six and in, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, no question that we're trying to do that. That's you know, objective for us every week. I just think that the shorter the distance, the more options you have, you know, where you can pretty much get the ball to anybody and pick it up, whereas the longer the yardage, I mean, realistically, there's only so many guys that can gain whatever formation you line up in. There's only so many guys that can gain 15 yards if that's what you need, you know. You can't run them all down there 20 yards deep. Whereas, you know, you're going to third and one, third and two, third and three. You know, you can hand it off. You can throw to the backs. You can throw to the tight ends. You can throw quick patterns to the receivers. You could combine a deep pattern with a short pattern and throw deep depending on the coverage, or throw short. If that's not there, if they take it away, just gives you more options. So you still got to execute the play. There's, you know, no matter what you have called, you've got to execute it. But I think it gives you more options. It's harder to defend. And it gives the offense, and it gives the quarterback, depending on what the play is, it gives the offense or the quarterback, you know, multiple ways to attack the defense instead of just, you know, having to run down there and throw a 20-yard pass, or count on a guy to break a couple tackles to get the yardage.
Phil, how important is Brian Daboll into the development of the offense with all the turnover he has at receiver?
Brian's done a great job for us. You know, he's been here since I've been here, and he's done a number of different things for us, had a number of different roles on the team, and very competent, hardworking guy. You know, has a good background in football. You know, came in here from Michigan State and was very well trained. Knew, even though he hadn't been with us, probably knew our system better than a lot of people, a lot of the other new people that came in because of his background. And I think he understands the game, works hard, and is, you know, does a good job with the players that he's coached. You know, getting them prepared, making sure they understand not only what we're doing, but what our opponents are doing and how to deal with it.
When you have a lot of turnover at a position, does the position coach become that much more important and kind of?
Well, I think every coach is important. You know, every coach has got to get his players ready to play. And again, that encompasses both what we do and what our opponents do and what they anticipate and how to take advantage of the individual matchups that they have and how to take advantage of the schemes that they give us. So it's important for every coach. I don't think you can single out. Well, it's important, you know. It's important to have this good guy be a good coach, but doesn't really matter about something. I think it's all important.
Do you think when he's teaching some of these guys, because he started here as a defensive coach, do you think for a receiver coach, just dealing with different coverage and stuff like that, maybe that kind of thing would help him?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, no question about it. Absolutely. You know, I think Brian understands coverages, as Josh does too, you know, for the same reason, that they've coached on the defensive side of the ball. They know what the defensive adjustments are. You know, kind of what things you could do on defense, what things maybe you can't do or are hard to do. You know, what adjustments are easy for a defense to make, what adjustments are hard for a defense to make, even within a certain coverage, and how to combine those coverages based on formations or route combinations. I think they have a real good understanding of that, you know, as does the quarterback.
More thing on him. What did Nick tell you about him when you first decided?
Nick, I'll just put it this way. Nick recommended him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I carried a lot of weight with me.
How well has Teddy played over the course of the season compared to, let's say, his best playing before he had the stroke and had that problem? Is he basically as good as he
is? Yeah, I think Teddy's a good player. I think he's a good player. I mean, like every player, there's some plays, you know, are better than others. Coach, some, you know, I mean, I think that goes for all of us, you know. We've all had moments that are better than other moments. So, I mean, I don't think you could exclude anybody from that group. But yeah, Teddy, he does a great job for us in a lot of ways. He does a lot of different things. He's versatile. He's smart. He brings a great level of toughness to our team and our defense. And, you know, he's a very instinctive player. You know, there's a lot of things that he does that sometimes you really don't coach. You know, he just makes the right decision, just does the right thing at the right time. In a split second, he has to make the decision. He makes the right one. And that's, you know, you can map out some guidelines and that type of thing for players, but there are just some plays that are just instinctive. There's a million things flying around. They got a split second to make a decision, and he usually makes the right one.
So that's
like Troy Brown does, like Brady does, like, you know, we have a lot of players I'd throw into that category, but that's, you know, sometimes it's just you could never create the exact situation that comes up for them. They just have to react to it.
Bill, can you talk about the importance you put on, I think you call situational football, and how much time you spend on clock management, timeout, managing timeouts, replays, things like that?
Well, I think that's a very important part of the game, and I think it comes in a lot of different phases. To me, situational football is really the two areas that you mentioned. Is one, as it relates to clock management or game management, and two, as it relates to one play. So if you're in there for one play, whether it's third down, whether it's a punt return, whether it's a goal line play, last play of the half, where it's a Hail Mary, you know, those one play situations, then, you know, knowing what you want to do in that situation and getting everybody to, first of all, recognize what the situation is and then get everybody to do it, that's, you know, that's where you want to be as a football team. You know, you start in training camp and you go through those situations and you practice them kind of generically. And then through the course of the season, you a lot of times add things so that you have more than one way to play a particular situation, especially if it's a fairly frequent one. And then you keep repping that. And then, of course, it depends on what the other teams do. And sometimes the other teams don't always do the same thing. They might have a different way of approaching that situation that you have to then adjust to. So, you know, it's kind of combining all those elements on a weekly basis, and we definitely talk about those every week. We don't necessarily practice every one of them each week, but we, you know, maybe over a 3 or 4 week period, we would pretty much get to everything so that it, you know, the cycle stays, all those plays stay within the players and the team's cycle, if that makes any sense.
Do you feel that your team is very well versed on when to call timeout, things like that, because of all that prep?
Well, I'm saying we talk about it and we work on it. I mean, is it perfect? No, it's not perfect, but we work on it on a weekly basis. And like I said, there's some things that you don't work on every single week, but over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, you hit them. And so, you know, some things they don't come up all year. Then other things might come up 2-3 weeks in a row. You just never know.
When you talk about instinct with a guy like Troy or Eddie, do you think that as guys get older, that kind of player has a better chance of staying strong than someone who's, you know, relying on physical, you know, more on physical or speed or something?
Well, again, I think every player has his own combination of skills, and they're all different. So some players have some skills that offset others, and they have strengths that offset their weaknesses, and it's not the same for every player.
But with those guys, though, do you see that the instinct is still as strong as it ever was?
I mean, yeah, probably stronger. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, a good player will learn from experiences that he sees or is taught, you know, whether it actually happened to him or not. You know, you can see something happen to somebody else, and maybe it doesn't happen to you for another year or two, but then when it does, you know, that somehow or other it triggers in, and you have a chance to make that decision, and you make the right one. And it might not even be, you know, a repeat situation for that individual player. It might be something happened to another player, another teammate, or it might have happened in another game that, you know, now that applies to him. So
how much does playing in a dome affect the game plan, and particularly preparing for the Colts in the dome?
I don't think it affects it too much. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't issues there. There are certainly crowd noise issues, and, you know, you have the speed. I mean, it's a perfect surface, perfect situation, but we have no control over that. So I don't think we would say, well, we don't want to run this pass. We don't want to run that defense. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't remember ever saying anything like that. Now, you know, if you're playing in a blizzard, I mean, that's a different story. So,
well, I don't know if this has been asked earlier this week, but have you ever seen such a dramatic transformation in the team's defense, specifically against the run, as the Colts have demonstrated from the regular season through the first two playoff games? And what are you looking at that they're doing now that they weren't doing when you see them now?
Well, I think that they're basically playing the same defense they played all year. I think that there were several comments from a couple of the Colts coaches, Coach Meeks, Coach Dungy, relative to the same thing, and that's what I see. So I think they're, you know, I've always thought they've been a good defensive football team, period. They're fast, they're quick, they have a good scheme, they're sound, they don't give up a lot of big plays, and they're playing their best football right now, which I don't think that's unusual either to see a team, you know, playing its best football at the end of the season. I mean, just go back to last year and look at Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, you can find a million examples of it. I don't think it's anything, it's unprecedented. I mean, they're doing a great job. They got a good football team, and they were, what, 9-0, 8-0, 9-0, whatever it was this year. You know, people talk about the Colts struggling. Love to be struggling at 9-0. So, I think they're a good football team. I think they do a lot of things well in all three phases of the game, and that's why they're where they're at. They're in the AFC Championship game. They got the home field. They've earned it.
Bill, how would you describe Tom's sideline demeanor in late-game situations, close-game situations?
Good.
Anything more than good?
I think it's good.
What makes him, what allows him to keep his cool in those situations? What makes him so secure?
Good in all situations. Tom's good in all situations. He sees the defense, sees the field, knows what we're trying to do. Has a good understanding of what the defense is doing. He's good and all. He's a good quarterback.
How about those in particular, though? When you say, is it the fact that he doesn't change? Does that play into why he's successful later in the game?
Well, I think you learn more, you know, as the game goes on. Hopefully you learn more about the game. You know, you see, get more snaps of the other team. Get a better feel for what they're doing. Sometimes the situation could be a new situation at that particular point in the game. Maybe that hasn't shown up, but you know, I think the more plays you play against the team, you know, the more you should know about them. And I think he does. I think he learns from every snap.
Has he always been? I mean, how has he progressed since you got here? Obviously, he wins the Super Bowl with a great drive in his first full season. But since
I think that's been a strong point of his ever since I've coached him. I mean, like everybody else, I think it gets better, you know, with more experience, but I think it's always been a strong point.
I guess the question is, how has it gotten better?
Through experience.
Bill, there was a, remember hearing a coach saying as he was sort of building his team that if he didn't get the center position squared away, that could sort of hold an offense hostage. And I'm just sort of curious if you would agree with that and why that might be the case.
Well, I think it's an important position. I'm not saying that because I played it poorly. But I think it's an important position, just like middle linebacker and safety and quarterback are important positions because they're in the middle of the formation. And a lot of the communication and adjustments, has to go through them. You know, so from that standpoint, I think it is important. And, you know, anytime you have a strength down the middle, running back, quarterback, center, middle linebacker, safety, you know, those guys are involved in a lot of plays. I mean, you can run away from a corner. You can't run away from the nose guard. You know, you know your tight end's not at the point of attack on every play, but your center is. You know, and basically either your quarterback or running back's handling the ball on basically every play one way or another. So, you know, there's a lot about those people down the middle of the field that involves them in every play. No matter what it is, run, pass, blitz, pickup, pass route, rush, you know, taking on a blocker, you know, taking up space in that part of the field and doing it correctly relative to the scheme, there's just no way around it. It's every play. And so consistency and dependability and execution at those positions. And that's not to say corners and wide receivers and tight ends aren't important. I'm not saying that. But I just think the nature of those positions puts them right in the middle of every single play.
Bill, were you a Colts fan growing up?
I was.
You were?
Don Shula fan, yep. Shula, Unitas. I could name, you know, a lot of guys on those teams.
Did it bother you at all when they moved to Indianapolis?
Well, you know, I wasn't really a part of it, so yeah. It's, I mean, it's not the first team that's moved a pro sports franchise, so, you know, I don't really get too involved in that, but it's no question that the Baltimore community supported the Baltimore Colts, and they were they're a big part of the team, and, you know, I saw a similar, different but similar situation in Cleveland when the Browns moved, so, you know. It's not. Some of those things happen. I mean, you know, I think we all know the circumstances and the reasons and the explanations and all that. So, I mean, I'm not going to get into all that. But, yeah, I was. And it was a thrill for me to be part of the Baltimore Colts. In fact, Jimmy was there when, and, you know, Bob was the owner. And Jimmy was, he was a little bit younger than I was. You know, I was 22, 23, whatever it was. I'd say he was maybe 16, 15, 16, 17, something like that. So he was around the team in training camp, and, you know, he was there, you know, on a regular basis and was, you know, a part of the team as an owner's son, you know, would be at that age, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Now, when I know, being obviously, you know, your father probably had the biggest impact on you becoming a coach and getting into the game, but did maybe growing up in Maryland, in kind of that golden era, the Colts maybe had an impact on your love for football too, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. The Colts were, they were awesome. I mean, you know, you had Unitas, you had Barry, or, you know, Lenny Moore, you know, who was a great player for him. You know, defensively, Marchetti and Bracy, Big Daddy Lipscomb, Donovan, you know, Shinnick, Pellington, Bobby Boy. I mean, all those guys. Lead upon him. I mean, I go down, give you the whole team if you want them. You know? And Shula was, you know, you couldn't do any better than Shula. And, you know, they had their weekly TV show, Corralling the Colts. And so, you know, Don would come in, he'd talk about the game, and they'd interview the players and preview the next game and all that. You know, it was only three channels back then, too. It wasn't like, you know, like it is now. We get, you know, 400 cable stations. And so that was a big deal. You know, it was a big deal. And the Colts were, you know, they were good, and, you know, my dad had some connections with Coach Shula going back to Ohio, and, you know, Carl Tassif and guys like that that were on his staff that were Ohio guys, and, you know, we would go to training camp, and we'd usually go to one or two games a year, a lot of times when the Bears came to town, because he had some friends with the Bears, too, if that worked out, and Unitas and Sandusky and guys like that worked at my dad's football camp, and, and Coach Shula, again, you know, Coach Shula and my dad had a relationship. And so when I went to the Colts, then I actually, you know, Coach Shula is one of the people that I actually knew in the National Football League, just, you know, through our association. You know, we played the Dolphins and I was at Baltimore and all that. So, yeah, no, it was absolutely, you know, and the Redskins kind of were too, but the Colts were just, they were just a little bit closer. And I guess through my dad, through our family, we had a little bit more of a connection with the Colts. But then working with them and, you know, with the Irsay family and, you know, with Coach Marchabrota and all that, which, you know, that was, I mean, obviously it was a big impact in my career, no question about it. But sure, I remember those days as a kid. I mean, I had all their football cards and, you know, it was, yeah, that was, I still remember watching the championship game, you know, in 59, watching Amici go and, you know, beat the Giants. I mean, that was, I'm sure a lot of us do, you know, that are my age or older, you know, remember that game, and that was probably, that game probably did as much pro football as any game.
Bill, so to follow up on what Albert was asking, so as a kid, when you look back, was there a little part of you, the kid that was still in you, that when they moved, thought, even though you were a pro and you were in the sport, did you think, this is just wrong that they moved from Baltimore?
Well, I mean, again, it's, I mean, it really isn't, it wasn't my decision,
right.
Okay? And I understand how the people of Baltimore didn't want to lose the Colts, just like I understood how the people in Cleveland didn't want to lose the Browns, and what all the reasons were and what all the dynamics were of why that happened, between the politicians and the stadium and all the money that's involved and all that, you know, I mean, I understand how that kind of stuff happens. Look, when I was with the Colts, I mean, and I've told this story before, but after my year with the Colts, when I was making $25 a week, and I was sitting in there in Coach Marchibroda's office, and I told him the only thing that I needed was a car, because I lived in Annapolis, and our offices were in Hunt Valley, which was about an hour and 15 minutes away. I said, look, all I need is a car and just a little bit of money because I can live at home. And that's, you know, that's it. And so Ted said, well, you know, be hard to get you a car and all this and that, you know. So we kind of said, well, how about $4,000 a year? So I said, that'd be great. I'm, you know, I could more than make it on $4,000 a year. And so then we had a meeting with Joe Thomas, and the meeting started like at about, I'd say, 11 o'clock or maybe 11:15. Joe Thomas was a general manager at that point. And that meeting lasted until about 12:45. And basically what Joe Thomas said, I mean, to make a long story short, basically what Joe Thomas said was, you know, look, when I coached with the Rams in 52, we had two coaches. You know, Ted, you got six. Now you want another one here, $7,000 and $4,000, and if Billy wants to be here next year, he can come back here in training camp like he did this year. And that's basically the way it ended. So Joe says at 12:45, okay, I gotta go. I gotta meet with, I think it was D'Alessandro, whoever was the Baltimore County executive, about building a new stadium. And so he left, and the meeting was at 12 o'clock. So Ted and I looked at each other and said, you know, here we are, $4,000 for me as a coach's assistant, and Joe Thomas is 45 minutes late in even leaving for a meeting with the Baltimore County executive about building a new stadium. And Ted kind of gave it one of those, like, you see what I'm going through? And that was, and then that's really kind of the way that whole thing went. And I know that Ted did all he could, and Joe just didn't, he just wasn't going to go along with it, which, you know, he was a general manager, so that was his prerogative. And so that's where it ended. And so I ended up in Detroit.
Hey, Bill, the night before a big game like this, typically for you, what's it like? Are you doing final preps? Do you get to sleep? Are you staying up?
Yeah, I definitely get to sleep. I mean, you know, I think anytime you get to the end of the week, you put in a lot of time, you've seen all the film. I don't think, you know, Saturday night I'm going to look at anything that I haven't already seen before. Again, this is a team that we played last year. We played in the middle of the season. You know, now we're playing at the end of the season. So it's similar to the Jets scenario where you kind of get them at different points during the year. It's not like we're going back really now and looking at all 16, 18 games, because we already saw half of them. You know, we saw them at midseason. So, you know, I think at that point, you know, use a phrase my dad used to use, the hay's in the barn. And, you know, you're confident in what you're doing. And, you know, certainly there's butterflies there, but you're confident in what you're doing. And your team's confident. And you just get a good night's sleep and get ready to go and play the game. And that's, I've never had a problem sleeping before a game. I've never had a problem with that. So, I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's the way it is.
Bill, how much do you put a premium on experience this time of year? When you have a critical play, you have a choice of a guy that maybe has a little more talent or a little more speed, or a guy that you know has been there before and has the experience?
Well, I'll go back to another saying that I think is would define my philosophy as a coach. In critical situations, think of players, not plays. And I think that's, I think a lot of coaches live by that motto, whether they actually want to identify it or not. And so rather than run some cute play that involves a couple guys that maybe haven't been or maybe aren't your top playmakers, I think when it comes to a critical situation, you want your best playmakers, your best players critically involved in the play. Now, you might have, you know, several of those players, but I think that that's, you know, in critical situations, I think that's basically what, for the most part, is the way I would want to approach it. So, I've heard a lot of other coaches talk about that same thing, and I really think deep down inside, that's probably the way most of us feel.
Coach, have you talked to Ellis Hobbs about keeping what happened on Sunday and the fallout over the course of the week from being at the
start? You know, I talk to the players and the team on a daily basis and on a weekly basis. Those conversations stay between me and the players and me and the team. That's what a coach-player or a coach-team relationship is. Okay.
Bill, earlier this week, Bill Polian said he felt that receivers were being played a little physically down the field in the postseason. And I'm wondering if you agree with that, if you've seen that in your experience so far.
I don't have any comments on the officiating. I'm just trying to coach our team, get our team to play well. That's where my focus is. Okay.